Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans and Jeff Shade, a show that simplifies the complexities of investments, taxes, retirement, and more so you can discover how to better sustain yourself and your wealth for years to come. Brian is a CPA with 30 years experience and a financial advisor, which brings a unique perspective to the financial world. This show is brought to you by Madrona Financial and CPAs, home of the Rooted Wealth Plan. Want a retirement plan designed to last 30 plus years? Go to MadronaFinancial.com and click Get Started to see what the Rooted Wealth Plan can do for you. And now, here are your hosts, Brian Evans and Jeff Shade.
Thank you so much. Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans, the show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to help sustain yourself and your wealth for 30 plus years. On today's show, we're going to be discussing common mistakes made with an IRA, also tax planning during different seasons of life. My name is Jeff Shade, and I'm just here to ask the questions. But the words of wisdom and solid advice, of course, come from Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jeff.
Always glad to hear it, Brian. Of course, I hope our listeners are doing well today, too. We've got another fine show lined up for us. Brian, it seems like everyone today has individual retirement accounts, otherwise known as IRAs. In fact, it's so common that I don't really hear anyone talk about the ins and outs. How often do you find people messing things up with their retirement accounts?
I don't know if I'd call it messing it up, but, you know, lack of planning, you can call it what you want. I mean, it just is. I mean, you'll be better off the more planning you do, probably, if you do the right kind of planning. I had to chuckle, though, because sometimes our shows are on real specific topics. They might be on business succession or 1031 exchanges with Delaware statutory trusts, and you might be sitting there going, oh, well, you know, I don't own a business or I don't own investment real estate. Maybe I won't, you know, maybe I'll turn on sports radio today instead of listening to Brian. But today, you know, the only people that should tune in are people with retirement accounts or that file a tax return. That's all.
That's everybody, so, yeah.
Okay, well, I guess today's show is we'll call it a broad-based show because right. It applies to everybody listening as opposed to a specific topic that maybe only applies to a few people listening. So with that in mind, retirement accounts and understanding the rules about that. It's interesting, in our industry, there's this fellow named Ed Slott.
Yeah.
And he is the guru of retirement account stuff. But if you ever tune into his stuff, probably some people would say, much like me, sometimes it's like, well, there's a lot of information there, but it's not that exciting. I'd rather watch paint dry than learn more about IRA rules or Delaware statutory trusts or whatever. But he's wildly popular. I mean, just millions of people buy his stuff because it's an important topic that's not easy to understand. You know, when Congress put together the rules on retirement accounts, I don't know what was in the water, but it's so complicated. There's so many rules about retirement accounts. And even within the retirement account rules, then it's like, okay, so what are the rules for retirement accounts? Well, that depends. Is it a 401k, a 403b, a 457, a SEP IRA, a solo 401k? Is it defined contribution, defined benefit? Is it a simple? You know, it's like, whoa, wait a second. I said retirement account. Yeah, I know. Is it a Roth? Oh, gosh, there's a whole set of rules for that. What's the age? Well, it depends. You know, it's, oh my gosh, there are so many rules around retirement accounts and so many different kinds of retirement accounts. It's no wonder that guys like me and Ed Slott can get talking about this stuff and people going, well, I guess I better listen to this because it does affect me. I do have opportunities here. I have opportunities to make bad decisions and I have opportunities to make good decisions, but there's no way somebody's walking around there with a normal job and a normal life with normal hobbies, normal families that knows everything about retirement accounts they need to know. And so that's why I thought I'd touch on some topics today to help people go, okay, I just need a framework on what should I even be thinking about with regards to retirement accounts.
And you're right, retirement accounts do have a lot of rules and therefore mistakes, I think, are often irrevocable. So let's talk about some of the common mistakes that people make. What would you say might be the most common of all of them?
Not funding enough. You know, I was just recently at spring training and we had an observation. We were sitting there outside at Starbucks and everybody walking in was a college kid. I mean, everybody, there's lots of colleges around there. And It occurred to me, wow, they probably come here a couple times a day. And, you know, they're spending pretty good money on this. Of course, my brain's going, if they would just make some coffee at home.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, I'm calculating that, you know, get yourself, even buy a nice little grinder or something, make yourself some fresh coffee, but save yourself $10 a day, whatever, and put that into a retirement account, you know what that's going to compound to be in 40 years when they actually do retire? I mean, we're talking 20-year-olds spending that kind of, you know, $10 a day on coffee. No, it's just $10. No. You know, I've done this calculation. It's the million-dollar lattes.
Right.
It's $1 million compounded with company match and projected earnings on your stock market investments. It's $1 million in your retirement that you could have if you grind your own coffee and make it at home. So, you know, it's little things like that, just not funding enough because the excuse is, well, I didn't have any money. But you're at Starbucks.
Yeah.
You do have enough money. The money's there. It's just not being directed necessarily, you know, where it needs to be. And so the compound effect, I mean, one of the greatest things ever to learn in business investing is compound effect, you know, interest compounding, rate of return compounding, what that generates someday in something that's going up in value. And so just knowing funding enough, putting some level of your earnings away, you know, at least trying to get to that 15% mark, I would contend, which I always did, is I was always told, okay, put at least 15%. I'm okay, so that took me a couple years because, mm-hmm. you know, I had bills and I was sure. starting out, but just a couple years. And then I was at 15. But then it occurred to me, what if I was at 25? What would my retirement look like, or 30? And once I was able to do that and did that, and it didn't just have to be in a 401k plan. It might be, let's say, a combination of things. It's like, okay, I'm going to put 15 into my, at the time, that's all I could put away was 15%. They changed the rules since then. But then it was like, all right, what if I put 10% towards my mortgage? Because I bought a house when I was 26. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And what if I put some money, you know, in an investment account on top of that, say 5%. Now I'm at 30. Okay, so I did all the spreadsheets on my Lotus 1-2-3, you know, with
bringing back memories there, my friend.
Yeah, I'm bringing back memories, dating myself, but
yeah.
But you know, I do those spreadsheets and go, whoa, I'm going to be a rich man someday. I couldn't even fathom it, and you know, it happened. And so, yeah, putting enough away, and then part B of that answer would be then analyzing: should I be putting it? If it's 401k, 403b, you have options. You can put it into a deductible IRA, 401k, or a non-deductible Roth. And so making a good decision on that might be 1B to the answer here.
Brad, if you're getting close to retirement, does optimizing where you put your money, does that make a difference?
Yeah, you know, that will make a difference close to retirement, early in life, all the time. But the rules kind of change. As I was just mentioning, if you're young, I would suggest you probably putting a lot into the Roth part of things because you'll have tax-free growth over a long period of time. Well, when you're close to retirement, maybe, you know, you've done an analysis of your tax brackets now and in retirement, what they're projected to be, that kind of stuff, and you might make different decisions. You might also look outside of your retirement account. There's you know, limitations on how much you can put in retirement accounts. And I've seen people limit their retirement finances because of those limitations, because they don't think outside the box on that. They don't go, where are other things I can fund that are not retirement accounts specifically? And then they might even decide, well, I'm in a high bracket because I'm still working, and I will be in a lower bracket later, or vice versa, to determine whether it should be Roth contributions or deductible contributions. But that might be also a good time to start getting your finances in order for retirement. You don't want to be carrying, you know, high interest credit cards into retirement. You may not want to carry a mortgage into retirement. You may want to solve some other things in your life outside of just funding your retirement account.
Brian, talk a little bit about funding the wrong types of accounts at the wrong time.
Yeah, you know, I've mentioned on the show before, when I started out and I was funding my 401k plan, we didn't have the Roth available to us. And so if I did, if you're a young person, you're not funding that, that probably is generally a mistake. As I mentioned, even as you get close to retirement, you might have read something, you know, some generic article about, gee, you should do the deductible because you're going to be in a lower bracket in retirement than you were when you're working. Not necessarily the case. You might have Social Security, pension, high RMDs, annuity income, rental income. You might be in a higher bracket when you're retired. So there's no one size fits all for this. You have to do a tax plan and a financial plan, both. It's not just one. You got to do both. A financial plan kind of sets forth what your income is going to look like in your later years. The tax plan then consolidates that analysis with some idea generating ideas, you know, with what you could do to improve your financial situation over a long period of time.
Brian, converting from pre-tax to tax-free, when can that become a problem?
Well, I had that with a client that you know, well, not a client, they were a prospect, and they were told by their CPA to convert all of their IRAs into a Roth all at once. And we're talking, it was over $600,000. And I just cringed. And that's what we were thinking. We should have called you. I'm like, yes, you should have called me. I hate to talk about the past when I can't fix anything because it was a year before and I wasn't their advisor. They didn't call me because I wasn't hired as their advisor. I couldn't answer a question I wasn't asked. And so, gosh, it just as soon as those words left their mouth, what was he thinking? You paid it in the 30-something percent bracket. Even if you'd done it over 2 years, you could have saved 50% of the taxes that you ended up paying because you could have spread it out a little bit. Yeah, I would have spread it out over more, especially in their particular tax situation. Just a bonehead comment. And that was given by a CPA. But CPAs aren't supposed to give financial planning advice. Financial planners aren't supposed to give tax advice. Madrona Financial and CPAs can do both. And we need both to make a good decision. So I saw that happened. It cost so much money unnecessarily. You know, it would have been simple to advise on that. Would have done a multi-year tax projection and dropped it into the years, because their situation was changing in this case, dropped it in the years where we could have paid much, much lower marginal income tax brackets.
Brian, if you make a mistake on your taxes, you can always amend it, but why can't you fix a large IRA conversion mistake?
Well, that's actually a good question, Jeff, you know, for differentiation here, because the IRA conversion, the Roth conversion, is an action, something that happened in the past. You cannot change the past. An amended tax return is a reporting thing. Yes, you can amend the reporting of what happened to correct it to what actually happened. Maybe you reported it incorrectly. So you can file an amended return to report it correctly. But you can't change what happened in the past. And so tax planning has to happen in the year that you're in. Tax planning should happen years ahead of time. But the actual event, the taxable events that occur within a year, you can't go back the next year and change the event. That's like changing the past. We don't have a time machine. We can't do that. We can correct the reporting of it. That's what amended return says. Oh, I reported it incorrectly. Let me fix that. So an amended return is not a very powerful tool. That's just correcting a mistake on something that was already reported to the IRS, as opposed to correcting the actual event. You can't do that.
Brian, I think based on our conversation today that our listeners very well may have some questions about common mistakes made with your IRA. So if that's you, you're not sure whether you've made these mistakes or you really want to avoid making mistakes that could be irrevocable, listen up because this is for you. I want you to this weekend call 833-673-7373 and request your Madrona analysis. Now, phone lines are open right now for you to do that. Once again, that telephone number, 833-673-7373. This Madrona analysis is just a very casual conversation between you and a Madrona advisor to talk about a variety of things, including mistakes made with your IRA. Now, you must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify, but if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. So don't fall into the trap of making mistakes with your IRA that are irrevocable. And as Brian said, you just can't change the past. So be proactive and request your confidential analysis. Again, that telephone number, phone lines are open right now, 833-673-7373. That's 833-673-7373. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, now for the wealthy, you really can't contribute to a Roth, but would a backdoor Roth be a possibility?
Yeah, you might hear about something called a backdoor Roth or even a mega backdoor Roth. You know, sounds wow, that sounds like, you know, for the wealthy and all that stuff. Oh, man, this is how they don't pay any tax. Well, they do pay tax. Forget what the politicians are telling you. They do pay lots of tax, most of the tax. But there are these things out there like backdoor Roths. There's these strategies for that. But one of the things people may not know is there's limitations to those too. And those limits may be so low that I kind of put them in a category as, is it a needle mover for somebody higher net worth and all that? And very often the answer is no. They're very complex things that we can go through on these. And somebody might decide, okay, I'm going to have all my time spent analyzing how the backdoor Roth IRA can help me in my tax situation. And in the end, they find out they could pay tax on $6,000 of income and move it into a Roth and have it earnings tax free. But we're talking $6,000. And it's like, wow, that was a lot of work, a lot of brain matter I invested into the strategy. And at the same time, I look at tax planning in a different way. Yeah, these things are out there, and there's lots of tax planning out there, but some of it's nickels and dimes and hundreds of dollars and that kind of thing, and may not be the focus. So I always like to focus on what's the low-hanging fruit here. What are the things that move the needle? Moving the needle, one of them is having an updated will or doing the analysis between a will and a revocable living trust. That's a needle mover. Having a credit shelter trust provision in your will or living trust, big needle mover. Maxing out contributions available to you through your employer and then figuring out whether it should be in the Roth or the deductible. That's a needle mover. Having your investments looked at, having tax planning done to lower your marginal rate in years where your rates are going to be lower. You know, now we're talking tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference in your lifetime. Those are the things we want to concentrate on first. But if you want to start getting granular, that's fine. Backdoor Roth analysis would be one of those more granular kind of parts of tax planning. That's why I'm not going to go into the details. It's very complex. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's something that you may have other things we want to focus on first, like when can I retire and what would that retirement look like? That's a needle mover for most anybody. So let's do those analyses first before we worry about the backdoor Roth.
Common mistakes made with your IRA. Brian, let's talk a little bit about spousal IRA contributions and how that can be a mistake.
Yeah, not taking advantage of that. Not as complex and kind of the same dollar amounts we might be talking about, but it affects a lot more people. So the backdoor Roth might, as I just mentioned, might affect more high-income people and so not everybody listening. Whereas most people listening maybe have a spouse and maybe that spouse working, maybe they're not. But if the analysis can be done, it's not that, again, not that complex. So here's a kind of an easy way to take a look at ways to improve things. And it's not just getting the, you know, if you have a non-working spouse, you might say, well, they can't contribute. No, they probably can, depending on your situation. But wouldn't it be nice to know that both of you, during your years where one of you was working, if both aren't, were putting away money for both of you, and when it came to retirement, you both had accounts to review and have access to. And so the more the better in retirement. I don't know a lot of people that say, gosh, I wish I hadn't put that money away for my spouse in a retirement account. That forced savings and the earnings on it, the compounding, gave us a whole lot more money in retirement. I wish I didn't have that. You know, I just don't hear that. And so why not take a look at that as one of the many pieces? You know, there's no easy button in financial planning, but boy, if you hit a bunch of little buttons that all move the needle the right way, boy, retirement can look a lot better. And analyzing whether a spousal IRA makes sense or not is one of those.
Brian, I understand there's this thing called the IRA 5-year rule even after 59 and a half. And forgetting about that, that could be a pretty big mistake.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules around the 5, the 10, the RMDs, and, you know, 5-year rules could be on say, Roth. There's a Roth 5-year rule where you contribute to a Roth. If you wait at least 5 years, you can, you know, maybe pull that money out. And then there's rules about earnings on the Roth that are completely different from the contribution. There's the age 59 and a half rule. There's taking money out for buying a first house rule. There's the 10% tax penalty that could potentially be part of this for taking it out too early in the wrong situation. So there's a lot of rules around waiting 5 years is a particular number for a Roth for the original contribution. Then there's also rules about inherited IRAs, for instance. There's 5-year rules, 10-year rules, lifetime rules on that, depending on your relation to the person that passed. Are you a spouse? Are you a non-spouse? Are you more than 10 years younger than that? Boy, people listen to this going, what are you talking about, Brian? I mean, I can do this all day long because
sure.
It's so convoluted. So it probably need somebody that's, you know, kind of a professional in this area that can talk about the different ins and outs. And everything I just mentioned there, that doesn't, you know, it's not something you have to analyze every year for everybody listening. These are one-offs. I mean, I don't inherit an IRA every year of my life. I don't have to really understand all those rules. until it happens in, you know, it's going to happen in my situation. You know, once you've done an analysis of spousal contributions, you probably don't have to start from scratch every year. You kind of know where you stand. And maybe 1 year is like the next going forward. Once you've started your Roth and you understand that, you might have a plan for when you plan to take that money out. And that plan with Roth may be way down the road because you don't want to touch that money. It's tax-free. That's the account you want to leave alone very often. And so even that, once you've done that analysis, you don't have to redo it over and over. So some people are going, I don't want to talk to Brian or Madrona. They're too complicated for me. No, a lot of this stuff just happens one time, and then it's you know, you just want to be aware of it going forward. You don't have to redo tax planning from scratch every single year of your life once you've done a good job to start.
Brian, what are RMDs and how do you prepare for those?
Yeah, RMDs are required minimum distributions, and that's where you have a retirement account, and Congress wants taxes on that. And you might say, well, gosh, I don't need to spend a lot of money. I'm in my 70s. And these things start, say, age 73. And you have a required minimum distribution. And it used to be that people would just sit on their retirement accounts their whole life and not pay any tax on them. And then pass away, and people would inherit that those IRAs. They would pay tax on them, but they might pay at their lower income tax rates. So Congress said, no, we need money now to fund stuff we want to spend money on. And so we're going to require people, say, age 73, 72, used to be 70 and a half, you know, depending on your age and what year it is. But they required people to, I call it moving money from their left pocket. Their left pocket is called qualified. You know, remember those old blue jeans that you'd have stars on them or whatever? Well, okay,
yeah.
Let's pretend your pockets have names on them. One says qualified, one says non-qualified. Mm-hmm. So they want you to move the stash of money from your left pocket that says qualified account into your right. Now, when it's transferring over, they grab some of that money, depending on your marginal bracket. So let's say your marginal tax bracket is 22%, and you move $10,000 from your left to your right. Well, upon that transfer, once it gets there, it was $10,000 in your left pocket, but it becomes $7,800 in your right pocket because they took $2,200 as taxes. So that's, you know, my visual of a required minimum distribution. They're going to grab that move. Now, once it's over the non-qualified, you've paid tax on that money already. You won't pay it again when you spend it or use it or take it out or whatever. But that's a requirement. And so people with large qualified accounts, 401ks, IRAs, 403bs, any of that's defined contribution, defined benefit plans, all that kind of stuff, sometimes they're sitting on pretty big numbers. And there is a table, a chart, you can look it up, and it says, okay, once you're a certain age, it might say, okay, you got to pay 4%. Of whatever your balance was on the beginning of the year. So you go, well, what were all of my qualified accounts? What were they at the beginning of the year? January 1st. Oh, they were $1 million. Okay. So during this year, out of those accounts, it doesn't matter if you have six different accounts, you don't have to pull a little bit out of all six. You can take all of it out of one if you want. But let's say your RMD was 4%. You have to take $40,000 out of your qualified accounts and put it into a non-qualified account. And when you do that, you'll get a 1099 at the end of the year, and you will report $40,000 in this example as taxable income on your tax return. That may affect your Medicare surcharge. It may affect your deductions. It may affect your tax brackets. It may affect your taxable Social Security. There is a lot of things that it could affect on your tax return. So I gave the example of $1 million. Well, what if you have $3 million? And all of a sudden you go, whoa, I'm at $120,000. Well, let's say you're 80 years old. That number is more than 4%. It goes up every single year. So the chart I mentioned, depending on your age, gosh, if you're, I think, 100, you know, at 100 years old, you're supposed to take like 50% out every year. You know, it's just most of it. And so the number goes up over the years, and it can have a dramatic effect on your future tax brackets. So knowing that, tax planning, again, as I always say, it is not a one-year thing. You don't do tax planning 1 year at a time if you want to do it right. You've got to look at a lifetime and say, okay, based upon my qualified accounts, you might say, look at the analysis, go, my taxes are going way up when I turn 73 going forward because of these RMDs. Maybe I should spread that out and do some tax planning, move some taxable income from my late 70s into my late 60s to even out the brackets so I can save tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of income tax just by going through an analysis where it's sitting in front of me. Of course, that analysis needs to be done with, in my opinion, a CPA advisor that understands the interplay between taxes, marginal brackets, investments, and lifetime financial planning.
Brian, I'm going to talk to our listeners right now. If taxes seem overwhelming to you, don't avoid it. Don't push it off for another day. Give us a call here at Madrona Financial and CPAs and let us help you with that. That number to call, 833-673-7373, to request your Madrona analysis. Remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, time for a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about tax planning during different seasons of life and more when our show continues after this. Stay tuned.
Do you ever worry if your CPA and financial advisor are on the same page? You won't have to if you call Madrona Financial and CPAs at 844-MADRONA or go to madronafinancial.com. Now back to more of Growing Your Wealth.
Welcome back to Growing Your Wealth. I'm Jeff Shade alongside Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. And in just a moment, we're going to be discussing tax planning during different seasons of life. But first, we want to invite Dr. Richard Himmer in, one of the partners here at Madrona, to share a few non-financial tips on how to emotionally and mentally prepare for retirement. Richard?
Thank you, Jeff. Today, I want to explore the crucial steps for a healthy transition into retirement. Focusing on the importance of nurturing relationships, knowing your role, and eventually we'll get into prioritizing your mental health. In my years of working with retirees, I've witnessed countless stories that demonstrate the power of strong family bonds. One such story revolves around my grandmother, Irene. Grandma Irene was an absolute joy to visit, with her sharp mind and constant thirst for knowledge, a true lifelong learner. However, like many grandparents, she fell into the trap of guilt-tripping her grandchildren, attempting to leverage us into visiting more frequently. As I explain in my podcast, How Not to Retire, this behavior is counterproductive, collusionary, and often leads to the exact opposite of the desired results, which is the definition of collusion. When grandparents resort to guilt or shame to coerce their loved ones into visiting, it can create an atmosphere of discomfort and obligation. Consequently, grandchildren may subconsciously, if not consciously, avoid repeated visits, knowing they will face pressure to commit to more frequent appearances. The key to fostering strong, genuine connections with your grandchildren lies in showing authentic interest in their lives and making each visit about them rather than focusing on your own ailments or imparting unsolicited lectures. By actively listening to their stories, engaging in their interests, and avoiding guilt-tripping tactics, you can cultivate a deep, mutually enriching relationship. Remember, as grandparents, if you want to enjoy more quality time with your grandchildren, be interested, attend, in them, not interesting, a ting. Yes, you've got wonderful stories, but let them be invited instead of forced. Schedule dedicated moments together and make those interactions truly count. On the flip side, retirement can also strain relationships if roles and dynamics within the family, specifically with spouse, are not clearly defined. A prime example of this is the cautionary tale I often share known as the general versus the CEO. I go into great detail on my podcast, but the story revolves around a retired military man who struggled to adapt to domestic life, clashing with his wife, who had been successfully running the household for years. What began as a months-long journey across the United States in an RV, starting on the East Coast, ended with two divorce attorneys by the time they reached Texas. This unfortunate story teaches the importance of respecting existing family dynamics and finding your new place within the household structure, going back to the identity. Who are you? Retirement is a time for compromise and laughter and adapting to new and different roles, not imposing your will or attempting to seize control. By approaching this transition with an open mind, a willingness to communicate, and a healthy dose of humor, you can navigate the challenges of retirement, but at the same time, you can be strengthening your family bonds. I invite you to join me in a new podcast adventure called How Not to Retire, a psychological approach to a healthy and wealthy retirement. where the time and energy are spent on the accumulation of wealth. Money is not the focus. That's Brian's cup of tea. Wealth is having enough time, enough fun, enough family, enough love, etc. To listen to the podcast, go to HowNotToRetire.com. That's HowNotToRetire.com and subscribe to the podcast, and thereby receiving a complimentary ebook in the process. If you so desire, you can sign up for Brian's weekly newsletter. And if you want, you can meet with an advisor who's specifically trained in all areas of wealth, including the money aspect, and discover for yourself how money and wealth are combined into a singular system called retirement planning. That's HowNotToRetire.com. Remember, don't try harder. Try different. Until next time, may your habits harmonize with your purpose, leading to a life filled with happiness, joy, and well-being.
Thanks, Richard. And for our listeners, you can subscribe to Richard's podcast by going to HowNotToRetire.com. Brian, let's dive into our last segment here, tax planning during different seasons of life. You mentioned something in the first segment about how to contribute to your retirement accounts when you're young versus how to contribute to your accounts later in life. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah, tax planning certainly takes a different view on things depending on your age, depending on your income, depending on a lot of different factors, of course. But we'll kind of focus on age in this segment. And this is all very general. Obviously, I can't do tax planning for somebody on the radio. I don't know your situation. I don't know your spouse's situation. I don't know your longevity, your future income projections, your retirement account balances, your tax bracket, or anything like that. But generally speaking, in your early working years, yes, I mentioned, you know, when I was young and I was at a low bracket, I wish I had the option of a non-deductible 401k contribution, because I think my bracket was 10 or 12% when I was working as a young CPA. Not even making, gosh, I'm really going to date myself now. I got this great job in downtown Bellevue at a CPA firm, and I was a CPA, and I think I was making $9.25 an hour, and I thought I had hit the jackpot, because I only made $6 an hour sitting on those tractors pulling those green pea combines in the valley there.
Yeah, right.
That was hard work. It was loud. It was out in the elements. And I'm sitting in this office. I got some free coffee at this desk in a cubicle in downtown Bellevue. Man, I was living large at $9.25 an hour.
Yeah.
But my tax bracket was really low. And so I wish I'd been able to put money into a non-deductible, you know, contribution so that it could grow tax-free for the next 40, 50 years of my life. I didn't have that, but young people do have that today. The other thing, take the match. It's free money. I'll never forget, I was asked to come talk to a contractor company. They had 33 people, 30 that worked in the contracting and 3 in the office. And talking about the importance of compounding, and I did the $1 million latte thing, and I was telling them all this stuff. And I thought, man, that speech rocked it, because they brought me out there because nobody was putting any money into their retirement accounts, and nobody was taking the match. It's free money. I can't think of too many things with 100% return on investment or 50% return on investment in a day. Yeah. And that's what a free match is. So I felt pretty good about myself until a month later. I said, well, how'd I do? You know, and they're like, well, there's still 3 people contributing, the people in the office. I was like, you're killing me here. I thought that I connected with the group. I had not. And so that was many years ago. I'd probably do a better job today, Jeff, now that I've done radio show for 9 years and getting better at communication skills. But I don't know if my wife would agree with that or not. Hopefully she would.
Yeah.
So certainly taking the match, it's free money. Absolutely. I always say on this show, I can't really give advice. You know, it depends. This is not one of those things that it depends. Take the free money.
Yeah.
Take your 50% match. Take your 100% match. At least put enough away to do that. In fact, many plans are set up where they automatically will take enough out of the new employee's paycheck, even if they don't do anything. I think ours actually does this. We're going to require that they take out the minimum to get all the free company money. It costs us money, but it's the right thing to do for the employee.
Brian, in your younger years, I understand that real estate might also be a good investment because time is on your side.
Yeah, time is on your side. Real estate has been, in many areas, especially in the Western United States, a very good investment. There's different kinds of real estate, many different kinds. The primary ones, principal residence. You know, I think early in life, if you're going to be in a place for a while that you think the real estate's going to do well in, If you're not going to be in a place for a while, closing costs, commissions, all that can eat you up. So you don't want to be churning your principal residence for that reason, probably. But investment real estate. Now, one of the interesting things about investment real estate is I have people, I bought a rental so I could get the tax breaks. I'm like, explain that to me. Like, well, I get to depreciate the rental, so that's a good thing. It lowers my taxes, and that's why I bought a rental. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about this. When you buy rental houses and you get a depreciation deduction, because when you buy a rental house, you're probably negative the cash flowing right out of the gate. Rents just aren't enough in most areas that I've ever seen to cover the expenses, to cover all of the expenses. So you have a net loss. So, okay, yeah, I deduct that on my tax return too, and depreciation. Look how smart I am. Well, two problems here. One is a net loss is a net loss. So I'm not saying real estate's bad. It can be very good in a long-term investment real estate we're talking about here. But, understand that you might be running a negative cash flow in the early years. It's a long-term investment. Secondarily, depreciation deductions. Yeah, you're deducting depreciation. But much like my example, early in my career when I was in a low bracket, you might be in a low bracket. And the thing about depreciation is you might own that property for decades. And when you sell it, are you going to pay back the depreciation at that low bracket that you took the deduction at? No, you're going to pile up all of the depreciation from all of those years and pay tax at your highest marginal tax bracket all at once. So the depreciation alone, let's say you have $300,000 depreciation on a house, a rental house or something like that, you're going to pile up all that $300,000 depreciation recapture probably at the 25% bracket for a lot of people. And you're going, wait a second, I only got a 12% benefit along the way, kind of a little bit every year. I hardly noticed it, but I'm noticing 25% of $300,000. $75,000 I got to pay in depreciation recapture? Yep. Unless you do a 1031 exchange, perhaps into a Delaware statutory trust, then you can defer that, potentially eliminate it someday with a step-up in basis. So be careful about just going, well, I bought this because depreciation is going to help me. Sometimes that's kind of masking as something that's negative when you thought it was a positive.
Brian, tax planning evolves over time, and we talked about the early working years. Let's jump to the higher earning years. What do we need to know about those years?
Well, when your income's higher, then you may want to consider contributing to pre-tax accounts if you have extra after-tax funds. So here's the example of somebody that said, yeah, I wasn't able to save for my retirement because I maxed out my 401k at work. And I'll remember this one like it was yesterday because the light bulb hadn't gone off for this guy. And I said, well, did you invest outside of your retirement account? And he just looked at me with a blank look and he said, what do you mean? You put your $20,000 a year into a retirement account. Did you also put money into something else? He goes, it didn't even occur to me that I could. I maxed out my retirement. Those are the words that were embedded in his brain. I maxed it out. I put the maximum away for my retirement. I said, well, that was just through a 401k plan rule. You could put money outside, and invest outside of that on top of that. He said, that never occurred to me. The poor guy was like 64 and wanted to retire. He didn't have any money put away other than what was in his 401k. And that wasn't a lot because, he had to fund his kids' education. They all went to college and all this stuff. He hadn't done that planning early in life, and it was so unfortunate because he said, I'm so sick of my job. I'm like, it was one of those financial plans that just didn't work without him working most of his life, essentially, because he hadn't considered investing outside of the deductible or non-deductible 401k, 403b limits. And so that just, I just felt so bad, but he hadn't considered that, and he started his financial planning a little late to the game to do a whole lot about it.
Brian, how do you feel about converting your IRA assets to Roth during this period of time, slowly doing that?
Well, doing that conversion, that's an analysis we do for our clients, many of our clients, on an annual basis. And so generally, you're thinking about doing that in your retirement years because you're in a lower bracket. You're going to pay tax on that conversion. And people forget about that. Well, I'm going to convert $100,000. Okay, well, you're going to pay tax on $100,000. Where are you going to get that money? And they're like, well, that's right. I got to pay tax on it all now. Well, maybe I don't want to convert $100,000. I'm like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe you want to convert enough to max out your 12% bracket or whatever bracket you're trying to max out. And so we almost have to do an annual year-by-year analysis. Now, a lot of people are going, boy, that sounds like a lot of work. Well, not so much for you. It's for the accountant that's putting that together. But isn't it worth it in the end if you can save thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of dollars that compound if you do that 10 years in a row and you saved whatever you've saved? That can make a big difference. So why not go through that analysis? But yeah, I generally like the idea of converting some IRA assets to Roth assets. I like having different buckets to pull from. When we're going to pull money, cash flow in retirement, I want to know that I can pull some out at a zero bracket if I'm in a high bracket, or I can pull it out as taxable if I'm in a lower bracket.
Brian, if someone can afford it, should they consider diversifying their assets into the tax-efficient alternative space? And what are some examples if you feel that they can do that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've done a ton of 1031 exchange into Delaware statutory trust. So that's a tax-deferred strategy. So you don't have to do, in my example earlier, you don't have to do a massive depreciation recapture all at once at your highest marginal tax bracket. Let's say you had a big tax earnings year, for example, and you're already in the 32% bracket or whatever, and let's say that you decide to sell an investment real estate property, maybe it's office building or eightplex or whatever it is, and maybe had $1 million, you know, tax depreciation recapture on that on top of your high income, you're going, holy cats, I am paying depreciation recapture 40%. That's $400,000 on my $1 million depreciation recapture. I don't want that. And it's affecting my whole tax return and all these other things. That's a terrible thing. So yeah, diversifying, you know, a simple 1031 exchange. Well, it's not that simple, but 1031 exchange into Delaware statutory trust. You defer that. You don't pile it on top of a high taxable bracket year. You continue to defer that tax, and maybe you continue to do 1031s until you get a step up in basis. No one pays that $400,000 of tax someday. You know, there are many options available in the alternative investment space for tax planning. So this is where the marriage between investment advisory and income tax planning is so important. Yeah, I could come on here every week and talk about annuities and talk about, you know, 60-40 stock bond split. But I don't know that that would really move a lot of people's needle. But there are many options related to investing as it relates to taxes. And so understanding that, now don't let the tax tail wag the dog. Some people get too focused on the tax efficiency of investments and forget about the investment itself. So it's important to have good investments. But if you're going to have good investments, why not have them be tax efficient if possible in addition?
Brian, before we continue, I want to take just a very brief moment here to remind our listeners how they can have a conversation with a Madrona advisor to answer their questions about tax planning and the different stages of life and what that involves. If that is you, if you're interested in what we've been talking about today, you want to have a conversation with an advisor who also works for a CPA firm, then I invite you to call us and ask for your Madrona analysis. That number to call, 833-673-7373. Now, you're listening to the program on the weekend here. Go ahead and give us a call because our phone lines are open right now at 833-673-7373 so you can request your complimentary no-cost and no-obligation Madrona analysis. Now, you must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify, but if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Taxes certainly can be overwhelming. Why wouldn't you want to get some help with that? So call 833-673-7373. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Okay, Brian, we've talked about tax planning over time. We've covered the early working years, the higher earning years. Let's jump to the 50-plus years. What do our listeners need to know about those years?
Yeah, when you turn 50, you can put more into your IRA or your 401ks. Definitely take advantage of that if that's an option. With your financial planning, you want to start doing the long-term financial plan and working backwards, making sure you know where you want to end up so you can chart a path towards that. Look at your investments. Make sure you're invested properly for your objectives. Is it cash flow, growth, security, liquidity, tax savings? Which are the priority? And finally, one of the things, some people want to retire before 59 and a half. Maybe you want to retire at 55, and most of your assets are in, a 401k plan. You don't want to roll those money out when you retire. You want to keep that in a 401k plan if you want to take advantage of something called the Rule of 55. That allows you to pull money out of that 401k plan before age 59 and a half and not pay the 10% penalty. So those are some of the things you want to think about in the 50 to 59 and a half years.
Brian, let's jump ahead to 59.5. What do we need to be concerned about there as far as tax planning?
Yeah, some of the opportunities there might include converting an IRA to Roth, doing that kind of conversion. Often that's done after somebody retires and before they start, you know, pulling Social Security and other things because they're in a lower tax bracket. You want to have that conversation about Medicare. What are you going to do for medical expenses, medical insurance, that kind of thing, if you are retired before age 65? And, you know, that can be a big component of tax planning because a lot of people are retiring before 65. I just mentioned those that want to retire at 55, leaving money in a qualified account to pull out the rule of 55 there without the penalty. A lot of people are retiring maybe in their early 60s now. They've acquired enough assets. And if that's the case, now we've got a little other planning opportunity here. We got to figure out, where's your medical insurance coming from? What about your spouse? Because, you know, you've lost your medical insurance at your company. It was covering your spouse too. So now you got to consider that up until Medicare comes in. Once Medicare kicks in, we need to project what are your Medicare surcharges going to be. That needs to be added to the plan, and then other things be added later in the plan. So all of this kind of works together, but that's some of the things I think about at age 59.5.
And at age 65 plus, those are the Medicare years, and I would imagine that you got to watch out for Irma, and I'm not talking about the nosy neighbor down the street. It's just no. IRMAA. So talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so Irma's hitting a lot of people. I've noticed, especially even low-income people, maybe they had a rental house or something and they sold it and they have a taxable event and they realize that their Social Security check gets dramatically lowered because they have to pay this big Medicare surcharge. And so that's something that can affect people. They didn't see that one coming because, you know, 10 years ago, we really didn't have this kind of stuff to worry about. I don't know the exact dates on that, but I remember it didn't used to be a thing. Well, now it's a thing that you get this big surcharge as your income's higher, and it doesn't have to be substantial by today's standards to where you're paying a whole bunch more for Medicare coverage. And so that's something that a lot of people want to concern themselves when they turn 65.
Okay, so let's jump up now to the RMD years, required minimum distribution. That would be 72 years plus.
Yeah, depending on when you start it. As we talked earlier in the show, the required minimum distribution is something where the IRS, Congress has decided they want their taxes while you're alive, whether you need the money or not. They're going to require you to pull money out of your qualified accounts, your 401ks, your IRAs, those kinds of accounts, and put it into a regular account. And then they're going to grab the tax on that at your highest marginal bracket in that year. And those percentages start just under 4%. So let's think of $1 million. The first year, I mean, you might be roughly $37,000, say, that you have to pull out. At age 80, that number goes way up because that percentage goes higher every single year the rest of your life. You have to recalculate based on all of the balances in your qualified accounts. And so this is going to add taxable income to a lot of people that they didn't have in their 60s even, that their taxes go up in their 70s. And so a great opportunity as a tax planner to start shifting taxable income. We have the ability. You don't have to wait. So many people think, well, I have to wait until I'm 72 or 73 to pull money out of my retirement accounts. No, you don't. That's when it's required. But what if you started pulling it out earlier and they go, well, don't I pay tax on that? I always remind them, isn't that what a retirement account is for? Didn't you work all those years, work that hard, put this money away diligently over all those years, invest it, grow it? Now it's there. And people are often like, oh, I hate the fact that I have to do a required minimum distribution. I get you don't like to pay the tax, but you earned it. You worked it. You know, take that money, live the life you want to live. If that helps you do that, then great. So I always remind people, it's not a terrible sin to pull money out of your own retirement accounts and maybe use some of that to live on and live the life you want to live, especially as it relates to your post-working years in your 60s, when you may be at a lower bracket than you'll be when you have to do required minimum distributions.
And Brian, most couples do not die at the same time, so let's talk about the surviving spouse years. Very important when it comes to tax planning.
Yeah, a lot of people think my expenses will be cut in half if I pass away from my spouse. I mean, that's not the case. Nope. Expenses generally stay about the same. The other thing is their taxes went way up because now their tax brackets are changed. They don't get to use the married filing jointly tax return brackets. They do the single brackets. Single brackets tax at a much higher rate at much lower income levels. So now they're not only they lose their spouse or their expenses didn't drop, their taxes went up. These are all things that we need to consider. And maybe that surviving spouse is going to not be around just 1 or 2 years. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20 years. So tax planning, as we see on the show, is often mostly for the surviving spouse, not the first to pass so much. They've already passed. It's for making sure the surviving spouse will be okay. The tax planning was done for them. The cash flow planning was done for them. The understanding that things are going to change, especially when it comes to taxes because of brackets and so forth. So yeah, the surviving spouse years are hugely important when doing a financial plan.
And finally comes the estate planning years. Brian, how does tax planning play into that conversation?
Yeah, understanding how beneficiaries be taxed on inherited IRAs, whether it's a spouse, whether it's somebody that's less than 10 years younger than you or more than 10 years younger, different rules apply. And understanding even the brackets, you know, we talked about tax planning with your own brackets. Here's an expansion on that. What about tax planning to your beneficiaries' brackets and making sure that whoever's going to pay that tax, someone's going to pay tax on untaxed qualified accounts, whether it's you or the people inheriting it. What if they're already at a much higher bracket than you're at? Maybe you want to take it out during your lifetime, move it into non-qualified account instead of leaving it to them at their highest bracket or vice versa. So there can even be multi-generational tax planning when it relates to marginal tax brackets.
Brian, I think based on a conversation here about tax planning throughout the years, I think that a lot of our listeners may have some questions. So if you're willing to be proactive about your tax minimization strategies, then call us because we may be able to help you keep more of your money. So if you want help with your tax minimization strategies and understanding how your tax strategies may change in different periods of life, then give us a call this weekend and ask for your complimentary Madrona analysis. That number to call is 833-673-7373. Once again, that number to call, 833-673-7373. And remember, you've got to have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify for this Madrona analysis. But if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. So what are you waiting for? Make that call this weekend. That number again, 833-673-7373. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, we've had some great conversations on the show today about common mistakes that people make with their IRAs, also tax planning during different seasons of life. And if you've missed any part of the show, remember, we're also a podcast. Go to wherever you get your podcast. Search for Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans. You'll find this show and our daily takeaways so you can stay on top of your journey towards a confident retirement. We're out of time for this week. Brian, I want to thank you for your time, but most of all, I want to thank our listeners for joining us. For Brian Evans, I'm Jeff Shade. Get out. Have a great weekend, won't you? We'll talk to you again next week right here with another edition of Growing Your Wealth.
No statements made during the Growing Your Wealth show should constitute tax, legal, or accounting advice. You should consult your own legal or tax professional on your own individual information. Brian Evans and Madrona Financial Services is licensed to offer investment advisory services through Madrona Financial Services, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Insurance products are offered through Madrona Insurance Services, LLC, a licensed insurance agency and an affiliate of Madrona Financial Services. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investors cannot invest directly into indexes. No investment strategy, including asset allocation and diversification, guarantees a profit or guarantees the avoidance of loss. Financial planning is an important tool that does not guarantee specific outcomes. DSD investments are only available to accredited investors and offered solely through the issuer's offering documents. The DST sponsor determines whether to accept any individual subscription documents. Madrona Financial and CPAs is a registered trade name used singly and collectively for the affiliate entities. Madrona Financial Services, LLC, Madrona and Bauer Evans, Inc., PC. Bauer Evans. Investment advisory services are provided through Madrona. CPA services are provided through Bauer Evans.